Get Ripple, the bright new drink that ring-a-ding flavor, Ripple.
This is episode 100, by the way. I looked. It really
There's
is.
There's no way.
Episode 100.
It's spent over 100 hours on this bullshit.
Oh, way over that.
I don't know how to feel about that.
You should feel really proud and really successful. Really.
Yeah.
Super. Do you want to say anything first to say what you've been up to the last
year? I don't want anybody to know. It's fine. Has it been a year? It's been over a year. I've been gone for well over a year now.
It's been over a year.
That's weird.
Way over a year.
She's going to start crying.
That's okay. She can be in the background crying. We've got three dogs and a baby kitten in the recording studio.
Yeah, great.
All right, do you want to hear my story?
I'm just going to go into it.
We've never gone this fast, but you know what? Let's just do it.
Get Ripple, the bright new drink with that ring-a-ding flavor, Ripple.
Okay, do you want my sources first? See if you can figure out what my story is about.
I don't know. I always wondered. I was thinking about that the other day. Why do we do sources first? Why don't we put them at the end?
Like a bibliography? Like in a book? Or like in a research paper?
Put them at the end. Okay. I don't care. I mean, whatever you want. If you don't want to give it away, just do it at the end.
Okay, I'll do it at the end.
Okay.
Because then you can guess. So I actually wrote this story while you were away. So I wrote this like a year ago.
But you didn't write me letters.
Oh, shut up. That's so mean. I did write you letters.
Everybody else wrote me letters, and I didn't get a single letter from Rosa.
Oh, my gosh. I did, and I sent pictures of the...
Oh, now there's pictures,
well,
too.
Well, not like photographs, but like pictures
that you drew. You drew me pictures?
No.
With crayons?
My kid did. Have you seen my artwork? What I sent, well, actually, you've got some of my artwork
hanging. Yeah, I have it hanging
in,
on the wall.
Yes, yes. It's beautiful artwork. Actually, this story is going to have a little bit of artwork in it. Okay, so my story, and I did write you stories, I mean, letters. But this story is about a man named Dr. Charles Scudder and Joseph, he goes by Joey Odom. Dr. Charles grew up in a wealthy family. He had a beautiful mansion in Chicago. He was an accomplished harp player. He played like this beautiful golden harp.
What an odd instrument to pick.
Yeah, you don't really like play those around the bonfire.
No,
very
not
often.
So much.
You know what's so funny?
You play them on Valentine's Day.
Which is tomorrow. Oh, God. I fall asleep, and I think you do too, almost every night to Gilmore Girls. And when I'm restarting the show over and over and over again, you know, the first season, there's that chick that's playing a harp. Remember her? And she kind of gets into it with Michelle, and she's kind of like, she's playing like Black Sabbath, and she's kind of got an attitude to her. I can't remember what her name is. But then she just like disappears. Like the character is like written off.
That's so weird. And I feel like I've never actually watched that episode fully awake. So
She's in multiple episodes. Probably like, I don't know, three or four.
Oh, I've got to go back and watch it for the 12th time.
Oh, yeah, at least. So anyways, yeah, he was a good harp player. He had actually been invited to play with the Chicago Symphony. Nope.
Try again.
Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
There you go. That's a hard word to say.
It is. And it's not really easy to spell either. It's like S-Y-M phony orchestra. In the early 1950s, he married this woman named Bortai Bunting. But they later separated after having four sons. They had their sons' names were Saul, Gideon, Finris. I always want to say Phineas, but it's Finris and Ahab. And Ahab unfortunately passed away when he was just a teenager, which really kind of crushed, as it would, you know, most parents. He worked as a professor of pharmacology, and he was an associate director for the Loyola University of Chicago. So I found out later that this university was also very involved in the MK Ultra program, or like the CIA mind control
that's
program.
Fun. LSD.
And that's what was Dr. Scudder's kind of specialty. He was in the mind, drugs, and behavior portion of the school. He performed government-funded experiments with mind-altering drugs like LSD. He was super, super smart. He was known also to be very eccentric, and he liked to kind of do things strictly for shock value. So, like, you know, this is back, you know, in the early 50s, and he dyed his hair bright purple. And he had a pet monkey. So he kind of liked to kind of throw people for a loop there. He really loved his job and he was really good at it. And people that worked with him described him as, quote, brilliant, polished, and soft-spoken, but confident. I don't think anyone has ever called me any of those things.
Well, maybe sarcastically I've been called those.
Oh, okay. By my mom. Maybe.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea. Start a podcast. Brilliant.
So it's now 1976 and Charles is 50 years old. And he's like, you know what? I am done living in the city. I want to get away from, and these are his words, taxes, light bills, gas bills, water bills, heating bills, and the helpless feeling that resulted from watching my old neighborhood disintegrate into an urban ghetto.
Ooh. Okay, I can get behind that.
100%. By this time, he's been married 2 times and he's raised his children. He was living in a large mansion in Chicago with his longtime chef slash housekeeper slash friend and lover named Joey. And he says, quote, the only person I really had to consider before making a move was my loyal friend and housekeeper, Joe, who for 17 years had cooked for me and my boys and cared for the mansion. He'd been in trouble with the law once and had only a 5th grade education, but he'd learned far more about the world than I had with all of my degrees. And somewhere along the line, he'd developed a talent for whipping up meals fit for a king. And that was like Joey's happy place was in the kitchen cooking. So Joey was 12 years younger than Charles, and they had known each other since Joey was just 21 years old and Charles was 33. So Charles decides to leave his teaching job on his 50th birthday. He's like, I'm out. I'm going to start this new life in this remote spot in the North Georgia woods. And the two wanted to just live off the grid way before, like, living off the grid was cool. So on the last day of his job, he decides he's going to take a few souvenirs with him, including 2 human skulls and about 12,000 doses of LSD. I mean, those are great parting gifts.
I guess so.
Way better than like a golden watch or something.
Yeah.
So the couple gave or sold away most of their possessions. And him and Joey loaded up their car, their Jeep, with their 2 bull mastiffs named Beelzebub and Arsenith. And I know I'm saying that last name wrong, but I'm going to tell you.
It sounds like arsenic.
It's A-R-S-I-N-A-T-H. So in theological sources, mainly like Christian beliefs, Beelzebub is another name for Satan.
Yes, I've heard that.
Okay.
I don't know where I've heard that.
It's more, I think, songs. I don't know. I've heard it too. I don't think it's used very often, but I don't know. I knew what that one was as well. So he's also known in demonology as one of the 7 deadly demons or the 7 princes of hell. So Beelzebub represents gluttony because, you know, like the 7 deadly sins. So he's the gluttonous one. He is supposed to be capable of flying. He's known as Lord of the Flyers or the Lord of the Flies, which I kind of wonder, and it's been 100 years since I've read that book, if Beelzebub is in that book as well, just because of the title alone. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but not very well.
Yeah. I just remember Kill the Pig.
Yes, it's creepy. That was a traumatizing book to have to read in what grade do you have to read that in? 6th grade?
I want to say 6th or 7th, maybe.
Pretty traumatizing.
Yeah, I don't know if they read that anymore. I don't know.
Weird.
So the other dog, Azanoth, a deity from... the author H.P. Lovecraft, and he's the ruler of like the outer gods and may be seen as the symbol for primordial chaos. So those are what he names his dogs after.
That seems like a bad idea. That seems like you're going to have some chaotic asshole dogs.
Some demon dogs.
It is kind of fun to say, though.
Beelzebub?
Yeah.
Beelzebub. Oh, do you Cole like that name, Cole? It. Is that your name?
He likes that name.
Are you a black demon dog? Okay, so Satanism. Just give me your two sentences of what you know of Satanism.
Oh, I didn't know there was a quiz. Okay, so I'll give you two sentences. There's one that's like, okay, these people are evil, and they're here to cause chaos and be terrible bad people. But then there's also the Satanic Church that says, no, that's not what we're doing. We're just following the teachings of whatever fallen angel from the Bible that questioned God's authority. And because there was a question, got banished from... I'm totally butchering this story. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, banished from the heavens, was thrown down, and that's where Satan comes from. But then these people...
Because he was an angel.
Right. He mm-hmm. was an angel. He's a fallen angel. But the Church of Satan is like, well, no, we are the people who are questioning. And we were... I don't know. You didn't tell me there was going to be a quiz.
I never do.
Does that make sense? No, are you following?
Those are really good answers. Excuse I was always under the impression that Satanism was like worshiping Satan. And it's not. According to some research I did, as well as some interviews with like real people. So I, you know, posted in my favorite Peloton mom group. And I just asked, like, hey, are there any Satanists in here? And would you mind answering some questions for me?
Oh, wow.
I know. That's kind of
ballsy.
That's
brave.
Yeah. And I was like, there's no judgment. I honestly want to know because I'm hearing, reading, you know, mixed things. And so this one lady, actually quite a few people messaged, but this one said I could use her name and use her quotes and stuff in this. She just used words that explained it that I could understand and... she's just really helpful. So her name is Shauna Farrell, and this is what she says. Quote, I'm a Satanist, the Satanic Temple or TST type of Satanist. So I'm a non-theistic and I follow the Satanic tenets. We use Satan symbolically, just as he was thrust out of heaven for breaking away from the religious norm. This is like what you said. We too separate ourselves from the superstitious and unscientific. This usually puts us into the role of, quote, the adversary when it comes to many religious ideas and agendas. Now, just as there are many different types of Christians, there are many type of Satanists. Some are theistic, others like myself are non-theistic, while others still are terrifying and should seek counseling. I see in the comments people are linking the Church of Satan's website, and I belong to the Satanic Temple, and we are very different. So, you know, she's kind of explaining it, what her beliefs are. I read once that they're atheists. Instead of saying atheist, they should say atheist because they put themselves first before all. Like, they seek, you know, pleasure and joy and happiness for themselves rather than for others. There's one that says, a lot of them say they don't, none of them actually believe in the devil. They believe in nothing. They believe in no afterlife or no supernatural. And so that's kind of what, Dr. Charles Scudder believed. He was, you know, all about pleasure and happiness and joy for himself and those he cared about.
Isn't that like a heathen? Is that the right word?
I think, yeah, heathen like is a non-believer.
Who embrace the heathen lifestyle, though? Or am I making that up?
No.
Is that something that's real?
Yeah, the heathens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So isn't that kind of like what, I don't know.
And I never could get a really good answer from anyone about, like, why are you called Satanists or Satanism or, you know, believe in this if you don't believe in Satan? Like, why would my belief have a name of something that I didn't believe existed.
That's the first I'm ever hearing of that. I didn't know that was...
They didn't. Yeah, they're not like devil worshippers. I think right. that's a whole different thing.
Okay. That's so, a lot.
The Church of Satan was actually started by this guy named Anton, and his middle name, I don't know how to say, S-Z-A-N-D-O-R, Sandor LeVay. But I actually found out that he was born Howard Stanton Levy. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh,
funny.
Yeah. That's quite a difference. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting choice.
So he had actually three kids, and this is kind of something that can go into a later episode. But one of his children, his daughter, is named Zena. And she is the one that a lot of conspiracy theorists say looks like Taylor Swift. Have you seen any?
Yes.
Okay. So
much like Taylor. Oh, so wait. Can much. We sidetrack really quick?
100%.
Because this is right after the Super Bowl weekend. And all did you see all the satanic conspiracy theories around Taylor Swift in the Super Bowl weekend?
The hand gestures that they're doing. Yeah,
whoever the
doing.
Fuck. Spice? I've never even heard that name before in my life. Do you know who I'm talking about?
The girl with like the
curly hair.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And she was doing like all the satanic
hand
symbols.
Gestures.
And she had the upside down cross.
Well, I also saw all the 13s. You know, they say that's Taylor's number. So, it's just...
That's her... I don't know.
Yeah, it's insane. But there, you know, a lot of conspiracy theorists say, like, oh, Taylor is like a reincarnated version of Zena. Well, first of all, Zena's still alive. So I don't know how you can be reincarnated if you're still alive. But also, Zena renounced her satanic beliefs and cut all ties with her dad because she said that he was just a liar and a manipulator. So that kind of throws all those Taylor theories to the trash. Anyways, so back to the Church of Satan. From what I'm getting from the people I spoke with, they're more like a libertarian in belief.
Interesting.
And they just want, they believe that they should be able to do whatever they want to do as long as it doesn't harm anyone else. So they can sleep with whoever they want to. They can put themselves first. They want self-gain, self-happiness. They just want to do what they want to do rather than what they are told to do. So Charles took his Satanism very seriously. He was an atheist who celebrated the worldly pleasures that he and other church members felt were denied by them, by the other, like, Abrahamic. Is that, wait, no, how do you say that word? Abrahamic.
Yeah, I think.
Why does it sound like hammock?
Because it does have the word hammock in it, or the sound hammock in it.
Abrahamic religions.
I did, okay.
You know what I'm saying, right?
Yes, I know what you're saying, but yeah, it does sound...
So do you remember, you watch Stranger Things, right?
No.
Oh, shut up.
I saw like
how
the first
I not know you didn't know
two
that?
Episodes, and then I was watching it with my ex, and he watched all of it without me. So
it's so good. Well, if you ever go back and watch it, this will make a little more sense, because there's this part when there's this guy, like Eddie, and he's like part of this Hellfire Club, and everyone in the town is accusing Eddie of being like a leader of devil worshippers, but he's not. He's actually a really good guy. So I feel like that's kind of what this whole satanic belief thing goes to. Anyways, back to the story. So Charles and Joe, they buy this 40-acre piece of land in the hills of Chattooga County, Georgia. And it's super remote and only accessible by an old logging road. And since it was literally in the middle of a forest, there's no running water, no gas, electricity, or phone lines. And this is exactly what they wanted. They had a well dug up so that they could get water through a pump. And when they left Chicago, it was during this horrible, terrible winter storm. And on their way to their new acre land, they actually had to pull alongside the road and sleep in their Jeep. And they had a very recognizable Jeep that had like a big painted pentagram on the door and stuff.
Jesus, they weren't hiding anything.
No, they, I mean, he had purple hair and a monkey. So I think he liked attention. So they're sleeping in their Jeep until the storm passes because, you know, they're on some logging road and they're probably not that familiar with it. So they're just like, this is the safest thing for us right now. So when they could finally see well enough to head toward the spot that they would soon call home, they see this dead, rotting horse in the middle of the road. And they're like, oh, okay, so we're going to call this Dead Horse Road. Not the most original creative name.
But I've heard that name.
Of Dead Horse Road?
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty awful. But I feel like there's more than one Dead Horse Road.
Well, there's also the saying, like, that's beating a dead horse, right?
That is also a saying.
So.
But I don't think those two things relate at all.
And why would you beat a dead horse? Oh, because to get it to go. It's already dead, so it's not going to go anymore.
Are you just putting that together?
I am. I'm totally trying to just figure out. Like, I don't think I've ever said that in my life. So the couple lived in a camper and their Jeep while they are building their new home by hand. And so remember I told you, you know, how super smart Charles was. He's also one of those people that could, like, read a book and remember everything in it. And so he just read a couple books on, like, house construction, and he had this plan for their new dream home. They worked together, just the two of them and their English Mastiffs, for 2 years building their home by hand. And by the end, they had this, like, elegant mini castle.
Jesus Christ. Uh-huh. Do you ever read stuff like this or hear about stuff back in, like, the day, you know, back in, what was this, the 50s?
We're in the 70s
now. Oh, we're in the 70s mm-hmm. now. Okay. But still, you read about stuff like this and you're like, oh, well, I had a DIY project from 3 years ago that I still haven't finished.
Oh, I have an entire closet full of those. Yeah. And they built a house.
They built a house. They built an entire house.
A mini castle.
Yeah.
And there are no corners. It's all round. Everything is rounded because he believed that corners are where evil hides. So if it was all round, there could be no evil in his home.
Okay.
That's a thing too. I don't know if it's a satanic thing or if it's just like a wives' tale thing.
Well, corners collect a lot of dust.
And dog hair. Oh, thank you. So the house they built, it was a two-story home, and they had laid around 45,000 bricks to build this home. The walls were 3 layers thick with a 2-inch wide airspace between the layers for insulation. They had a wood-burning stove for heat, an outhouse, and they grew their own food in the garden. Beyond the house, they had a small vineyard for making homemade wine. They also were beekeepers and harvested honey for wax and candles. So far, I'm totally on board. Like, I mean, I'd like some electricity, but I could do with candles.
No.
You couldn't?
No.
Why?
Have you ever tried to, like, navigate your home after the sun goes down with candles?
No.
Yeah, because it's terrible.
Okay. So the first floor consisted of a kitchen, a dining room, and a living room. And then upstairs is 2 bedrooms. And you had to climb up this circular staircase to get to the second floor. There were stained glass windows that decorated the walls, all made by Charles. And most of them were like Church of Satan kind of like looks to them. And then they had this pink gargoyle that sat on the ledge of the house overlooking their rose garden. I have some pictures to show you, actually. So here's, I need this back because it has half of my notes on it. There's the gargoyle at the top. And then there's Charles with one of the mastiffs.
Ah, that dog is freaking huge.
Isn't he a beast?
They're so big. Look at the size of his paws.
But he's kind of cute, right? So I'll show you some more in a minute. Yeah, the pink gargoyle sounds super cute. I actually posted that in our Instagram stories just a little bit ago. So the house is decorated with Gothic artwork, statues, books, and beautiful furniture. But he also, you know, had the 2 human skulls that he took from the skull on display. So they named their new home Corpsewood Manor after the bare trees that had dropped all of their leaves because they looked like a bunch of dead trees. So they're Corpsewood.
Dead horses and Corpsewood. Mm-hmm. All right.
And the devil.
They have a theme.
Yeah. So next to the main house, they also built a 3-story building that they called the chicken coop. So the first floor was for chickens, The second floor was for canned goods, dried food, and an elaborate collection of pornography. And the third floor, your face right
okay.
now.
Okay.
And the third floor they called the pink room. And this is where they entertained their guests. Because they didn't really like people in the main house. They thought that was, like, their private area, their sanctuary. So when anyone would come over, they would go to the third floor and hang out in the pink room. Sometimes they would have tea parties up there. Other times, people would tell an entirely different story. Many say that Charles and Joe like to invite guests over for wild sex parties in the pink room. The room, with its pink walls, pink chairs, pink blankets, pink mattresses, pink shag carpet, also had a collection of whips, chains, and a logbook where guests would kind of sign their name, and then next to their name, they'd write their fantasies and sexual preferences. So remember this logbook, because it's going to come up a little bit later.
Okay.
The pink room is also where guests could indulge in their every urge of sex as well as drugs. And this is kind of something that everyone in the town seemed to know about, almost like it was an open invitation. Charles and Joe shared their wine that they had made with people. They shared, you know, some of the LSD that Charles had taken with anyone that wanted it.
Wow. That's...
very welcoming.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very generous.
Very much. Everything was always consensual. Like, there was no one ever got anything laced. No one was ever forced to do anything. And Charles, you know, because he's a doctor, he'd even do like a full physical on each guest to make sure that they were healthy enough to participate in the activities. So Charles and Joe had many guests from out of town, as well as people that were just curious about the castle. The castle itself, because, you know, word started to get out, started to be known around town as, like, that homosexual devil-worshipping castle up on the hill. A lot of hunters came by to ask permission to hunt on their land because they had a lot of acres. And the couple not only would say, oh, yeah, go ahead, go for it, they'd also share some of their homemade wine with them. One of the people that Charles and Joey made friends with was this 17-year-old kid named Kenneth Avery Brock. And he kind of is known by Avery. So for the rest of the story, I'm going to refer to him as that. There are some reports that say the relationship between the three men varies. Some say that Avery met them when he was asking to hunt their land. And some say Avery would frequently drink, do drugs, and have sexual encounters with the men. But either way, they knew each other and they considered them friends. Avery was also a really good friend with this guy named Tony West, who was 30. He started living with Tony after his mom kicked him out of his house at 17. The two came from similar backgrounds, and Tony was born in Indiana and was the only son out of five children. His father died in a terrible car accident when he was just 10 years old. And his mother remarried to a police officer that was extremely strict and hard on Tony. When Tony was 13 years old, he shot and killed his two-year-old nephew. He was supposedly trying to show the little boy the gun and didn't know it was loaded and aimed it at his head and fired. And he was only 13 years old when this happened, so they didn't send him to jail. Instead, they sent him to a child institution until he was 18. Tony left the institution when when his time was up there, and he didn't have, you know, the best upbringing. So his life instantly kind of went to crime just to survive. He did a lot of petty theft, got into fights, was in and out of a lot of trouble. When he was 22 years old, he was given a 2-year sentence in prison. But instead of serving his 2-year sentence, he was able to escape from prison and was on the run for 5 years. During that 5 years that Tony was running from the law, he managed to get married and father 5 children. Tony didn't keep his family life very safe and happy. When he was 27 years old, He was playing poker with his brother-in-law and shot him. As his brother-in-law, his name was Kenneth, is trying to run away from Tony because he got mad about the poker game. Tony then shoots him once in the stomach, once in the head, and twice in the back.
That's a little excessive.
And he survived.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What did he shoot him with? A BB gun?
I don't know. But he, you know, he shot the 2-year-old when he was only 13. He skipped town for some other reason and avoided going to prison for those 2 years. He now tries to kill this other person. And here's another test for you. How many years do you think he was given?
What year was it?
I think we're in probably the late 70s.
Okay, well, since I see, at that time, for whatever reason, I feel like they would be really, really hard on crime. But since you're asking me, I'm thinking not.
Okay.
So, I don't know, a couple years in probation?
3 years.
Okay, I was going to guess 2.
Mm-hmm. 3 years for shooting someone that many times.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Why?
And he had already was supposed to serve 2 years. So technically, they're only giving him 1 year.
Okay, yeah, one additional year on top of the 2 years. That's wild.
So when he gets out of prison, he's 30. He's 30. 30. He moved into a trailer, and he needs a roommate, and that's when the relationship with Avery begins. So Avery also lost his dad at a young age. His dad passed away when he was just 7. His mom also got married shortly after to a very strict man who was very abusive. Avery said that he'd take the beatings, though, so he wouldn't beat on his mom. When he was 17, he was kicked out. He kind of, I think, looked at Tony as kind of a father figure. The two bonded over huffing a mixture of paint thinner, varnish, model glue, and a bunch of other chemicals, which was known as Toodaloo.
Oh, that's like Toodaloo.
Toodaloo. Probably because you're like so loopy in the head, you're going to pass out. So depending on the day, Avery's story changes. So sometimes he says one night he's in the pink room with Tony and some others and they're hanging out. And according to Avery, Charles asked him if he'd like to receive oral, to which he accepted. And that's one thing that many have stated over and over, that like anything that happened in the pink room was always consensual. Okay. And although there is a lot of drug use and alcohol, you know, they always knew what they were taking. So Tony, I guess, also was asked if he'd like to be pleased, and he said no. So they're driving home now from the pink room, and Tony's, like, super disgusted by Avery, and he's, like, making a lot of homophobic comments about him. And Avery gets upset, and he's like, dude, I was drugged. I didn't have any control of what was happening, and that Charles had taken advantage of him. So, a little bit here, Avery was only 17 at this time, but also at this time, the age of consent is only 14.
What the hell world are we living in where you get a year in jail for shooting someone however many times, and the age of consent is 14?
Yeah, I think that's...
But he still didn't consent.
Well, he says that he was taken advantage of... I don't know. It's, yeah. Regardless, it's too young. But other times, the story goes, like, Avery told Tony about these, like, quote, queer devil worshippers that were super rich and they're hiding their fortune in their castle. So I don't really know which is the right story on how Avery got Tony to kind of meet Charles and Joe. But he decided somehow to get Tony all riled up. So these two guys get the idea that Charles and Joey are so wealthy that they must have a lot of cash hidden in their house, since they believed that the couple probably wouldn't believe in like a traditional banking system. So they make this plan to rob Charles and Joe. On December 12th, 1982, they pick up Tony's cousin. His name's Joey Wells, and his date, and this is like their first date, right? with Joey and this girl named Teresa Hudgens. So first date, you're hanging out with this guy and these other two people pick you up. You guys are going to go hang out, driving around, you know, just probably huffing on Tootaloo. And they decide to head to Corpsewood Manor. And they're like, oh, these guys will hook us up with some, you know, free drugs and wine. So the two on their date, they have no idea of the plans that Avery and Tony had to make to rob Charles and Joey. And they also didn't know that there's a rifle in the car. The four friends are hanging out in the pink room. And they're hanging out with Charles. Joe is in the main house with the two dogs. And they're all drinking and having a good time together. Avery excuses himself from the group and heads downstairs. As he comes back into the pink room, he's carrying a .22 caliber Remington Speedmaster. Do you know what that is?
Isn't that a lever revival? A revival? Rifle? A lever action rifle?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me. I thought it was another quiz.
No, you know guns more than
I do. Wait, what is it?
A .22 caliber Remington Speedmaster.
Okay, I'm thinking sounds it's very like a fast. Lever where you go like
lever
that.
Action?
Yeah.
Are you looking it up?
Yes. Yes, it's a lever action rifle.
Whoa, you're really smart. Okay, so.
That's it. Yep.
Okay. Then Avery walks into the room with this gun, and Charles sees it, and he kind of laughs, and he says, bang, bang. And he's like, you know, making a joke out of the situation because Avery's his friend and he's, you know, been drinking and he has no reason to believe that Avery would really hurt him. So Avery starts getting mad and then he pulls out a knife and he holds it on Charles and he yells, where's the money? Tell me where it is. And then Tony starts yelling, which kind of freaks out the couple that are on their first date. So they start yelling because they're scared and they don't really know what's going on. So Charles is telling them there's no money. And he's trying to prove it to them by telling them to look around at the way they live. They have no electricity, no phone, they grow their own food. And most of the money that they did have was spent on building their home. And if they did have any extra money, it was in the bank. It wasn't in the house. Tony's nephew and Teresa are scared and Teresa's crying and upset. And, you know, Charles has got a knife on him and a gun being pointed at him. But, you know, being the kind of person that he is, he's trying to just reassure her and tell her everything's going to be okay. You need, you know, calm down. We're going to get through this, which is pretty, pretty brave of him. So by this time, Tony and Avery are pissed because Charles won't tell them where the money is. And there isn't any money to be found around the pink room. So they take some sheets off of one of the mattresses and tie up Charles. And Avery asks where Charles's soldering iron is so he can rape him with it.
Oh!
And Charles again...
Why?
Kind of laughs.
And that's not funny.
Well, he's trying to, like, defuse the situation. He goes, why would I have one? We don't have electricity. And that kind of pisses him off a little bit more. So Avery leaves Charles tied up and puts a gag in his mouth. He takes the gun and heads to the main house to see if he can get Joey to tell him where they hide the money. Joey's in his favorite place in the kitchen, and the two dogs are sleeping in the kitchen with him. And Avery and Joey have some sort of an altercation, and soon after, everyone in the pink room hears four gunshots. Joey had been shot. The dogs, I guess, went after Avery, and then he shot and killed them, too. Avery goes back to the pink room, looks at Charles, and says, I just killed that man and both of your dogs.
Oh.
So Charles obviously gets very upset and emotional, and Joey and those dogs were his life, and he had built a home with them, and they were his family. So... Thomas and Avery, they take Charles and drag him to the main house so he can see what Avery did. And he somehow was able to get the gag out of his mouth and just screams while trying to break away to be near Joey. Thomas and Avery are still asking for the money, and Charles just doesn't even seem like he cares anymore. Avery says to him, quote, I asked you where the money was. And Charles is just distraught, and he says, quote, "I asked for this." Avery walks up to him and shoots him. The killers grab anything that they can find that they think has any value, and they steal it and they load it into Charles's Jeep because all of a sudden Tony's car won't start. They actually left a whole bunch of really valuable paintings and artwork on the wall because they were too stupid to know that they were worth any money. And they tried to load the harp into the Jeep as well. Like, they were going to try to pawn it or who knows what, but it was too big and too heavy for them to get into the Jeep. So the four end up leaving Corpsewood Manor, and Charles, Joey, and the two dogs are left dead and behind. Teresa's still freaking out. She wants to call the police, and they, you know, tell her that she's not going to do that, and they drive her to Tony's sister's trailer. And Joey has his mom give her a ride home to back to her house. And on the way home, she just explodes all over the mom, says, like, this is what happened. We have to go to the police. And Joey's mom says, you're not going to the police, and actually holds Teresa, like, hostage for 4 days until she's able to call her uncle to come and get her. So the two killers, they know that they need to ditch the Jeep because it's so recognizable. Remember, it's got like that.
The giant freaking pentagram on the door.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Kind of noticeable. Probably would be even more noticeable had a golden harp hanging out the back of it. But they couldn't do that one. So it's December 13th now, and they stop at a rest stop. And they see a man that's sleeping in his Toyota by himself. And Tony and Avery figure that this man is alone and has a car that a lot of other people have. So it's like a good disguise. The owner of the car was 26-year-old Navy Lieutenant Kirby Phelps. Tony knocks on the car window with the gun, waking him up, and forces Kirby out of the car. He walks him to a wooded area and ties him to a tree. Kirby actually manages to punch Tony and get away from him just long enough for Tony to shoot him 3 times in the head. So they have this car now, this Toyota. They've killed another person. And in the meantime, one of the friends of Charles and Joey goes to their house because another of their friends had recently passed away and he wanted to let the couple know. And he sees that the Jeep is missing. So like, oh, maybe they're out in the town getting groceries or something. So he comes back the next day and he notices bullet holes that he had missed the day before. And he opens the door and just sees the horrible scene of his friends and their dogs and calls the police. Teresa's actually at this time, same time, able to escape where she was being held. And when her uncle gets her, she goes to the police, tells them everything, who did what, and a warrant is put out for the killers. And they fled all the way to Mississippi. And it's been 8 days now since the killing, and the two start fighting amongst themselves. They're at a strip club, and they get into this big old brawl and just decide to go their separate ways. They have no money, no drugs, no alcohol, nothing. And Avery returns to Georgia and actually turned himself into the police on December 20th. He's like, I know they're after me. I'm just going to turn myself in. And Tony actually does the same thing in Chattanooga, Tennessee on December 25th. He's in a bar and he sees this police officer and he goes up to the officer and he's like, hey, go ahead and take me. And the officer's like, who are you? I don't know who you are. And he runs Tony's name and there's no warrant or anything out for his arrest because he's not in the state of the killings. He's in Tennessee at the time. So he tells him the whole story, and the police officer actually takes him to state lines to Georgia so that he can turn himself in. So eventually Avery was found guilty of 2 counts of murder and sentenced to death. Avery West said of them, quote, "All I can say is they were devils and I killed them. That's how I feel about it." So he had no remorse. Thomas pleaded guilty and received 3 consecutive life terms. Avery Brock is currently serving his sentence in Georgia State Prison, while Tony West is at Augusta State Medical Prison. They both have been denied parole multiple times, and they are still in prison today. Okay, so remember the name of our podcast is The Ripple.
Is it? I forgot. It's been over a year.
So this is the little ripple here. Dr. Charles Scudder was being, right before he got killed, he says the quote, "I asked for this." There's a portrait of himself, of Dr. Scudder, done months prior to the tragedy, in which he is pictured gagged with 5 bullet holes in his head, and that's exactly how he died.
And weird.
There's the picture right there for you to see.
What the hell? Oh, that's creepy.
And that was hanging in his home.
That's, he wanted to look at that?
I guess.
That's so gross.
And all 4 of the people that, you know, were there during the murder, none of them had realized that, you know, picture was there. They didn't, you know anything about it. Also during the investigation and trial, the Satanic Panic, you know, we all have heard of that. The victims were vilified as like evil devil worshipers, and because of their interest in the occult and their open homosexuality. But despite having been very well liked in the community, many locals will still refer to that area as, quote, Devil Worshipers Mountain. And they claim that taking a brick from the property will lead to being cursed for life. And then back in the mid-80s, the house actually caught on fire. And there's still some of the remains there because, you know, they did it by brick. So it was pretty strong.
Sturdy, yeah.
But a lot of people will still go and, you know, they say that they hear, like, dogs barking or a harp playing. And kind of spooky, just the name itself. And the last little bit here. There was a small private funeral service held at Corpsewood Manor for Dr. Charles Scudder and Joseph Odom. Odom's ashes were scattered in the Rose Garden near Corpsewood Manor, and Dr. Scudder's ashes were taken back to Wisconsin by his sister and buried in the family plot on April 25th, 1983. So as I was reading, there's a whole other thing. I mean, you could go down another giant wormhole about the Tri-State Crematorium, place where they cremate people.
One of them is a place where they cremate people, and the other one is a place where they make ice cream.
Oh, I would much rather go to that one.
I think that's the creamery.
Okay. Okay, well, the cremation place where they burn bodies, there's a whole bunch of crazy weird stuff that happened there, which...
Like recently?
Back in, like, the mid-80s.
Oh, okay.
It's, long story short, I'll tell you, like, they couldn't get it hot enough to actually burn the bodies. And
I feel like I heard about this, but I thought it was something recent. Uh-huh.
Maybe it was more recent. Like, there's something like, I don't know, 300 and some bodies buried because they couldn't actually burn them. So when people would ask for the remains, they would send them crushed up cement.
Okay, but it seems like fireplace ashes would be a lot easier. Just like wood ash.
Oh, just like a fire. Like,
yeah.
Like having then a, you know it's a barbecue. Ashes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
Okay.
So that's a whole other kind of cool story. The gold encrusted harp and bronze statue from Corpsewood actually went to the defense attorney, Bobby Lee Cook. And Cook had been hired by Dr. Scudder's sons to represent their claim to the estate. Joseph Odom's sister also claimed the estate since Dr. Scudder's will left everything to him. Because remember, like, he kind of lost contact with his kids. So the property was purchased soon after the murders. And that's when the stories began to circulate about what I told you about. The hauntings that people thought happened. They would hear, like, gunshots, dogs barking, the harp playing. And currently the property is privately owned, but still used for hunting. And then I'll show you, this is the pink room, the top one right there. And then you can kind of see some of the arches of the house itself. That's like what they built.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then on the back.
Oh, there's more pictures.
Is the house again, like before it burned.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's pretty elaborate. Like, it is a castle. It's not just some, okay, a small castle.
Oh, that's the chicken coop.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, yeah, not quite a castle. Interesting definition that you have there.
But even the chicken coop is three stories.
Three stories. I don't know if chickens need three stories.
Well, the second floor was pornography and dried goods.
Yeah, there is that.
So, and then the asshole that killed them. Yeah. One of the assholes. Creepy looking man.
Yeah, he is. But then I feel like everybody in the 70s was creepy looking, so it's hard to say.
That's true. Very true. But that's my story. That's the first story back to the Ripple.
Wow. That was a lot.
Wasn't it?
You had drugs. You had
pedophilia.
You had group sex. You had
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
I mean,
satanic things and castles. And you pretty much covered all the bases.
I know.
I don't like that you had the dead dogs involved. I think we should try to avoid those stories. For some reason, they just keep coming up.
I know. It's funny because I haven't been on our Instagram for a while. And not too long ago, I got an alert that someone had like reposted one of our posts that said, if the dog dies in the movie, I'm not watching it.
Yep. And then you come back with a dog killing story.
I know.
Wow. It's been a long time.
How do we end this? Do you do a fun fact now?
Oh, did we do that? Did we do fun facts or like a trivia?
I mean, we could do
two truths and a lie.
Oh, do that. That's always fun. I'm terrible at that.
Oh shit!
Get so the fake I gotta, out.
Is it based on the location? Or?
Sure. You know what? This is a new era. I'm in my Ripple podcast era. How many Taylor Swift references could I make this episode?
Let's do Taylor Swift facts.
Oh, I'm not very good with that, but I'll try. Do you think she's
satanic?
Uh-huh.
No. I think she's just so freaking famous that there is going to be every rumor about her possible.
Oh, and some
also, I mean, I didn't watch the Super Bowl.
I didn't either.
But her boyfriend, is he an asshole or what?
With him, like, yelling at the coach?
Yeah.
I heard he hardly played the game at all, but I can't really deny or confirm that because I didn't watch the game. I didn't even watch the halftime show.
I don't even know who was in the halftime show.
Usher. But I did watch a little of the pregame show that was on TikTok. It was No Doubt, so that was kind of cool.
Oh.
I had fun watching that.
I didn't even know they were a thing anymore.
They're, like, going to be playing Coachella and start touring again.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. Everything okay. In the 90s is coming back.
Yeah? Yeah. I'm not going for the low-rise jeans, so that's not happening. Is that 90s or the early 2000s?
Probably early 2000s, when your tramp stamp hangs out the back with your thong, like, way up high.
Yeah. The whale tail.
That
really?
Before. That's hilarious.
You've never heard that?
Never.
Oh, wow. I don't know where you've been the last 24 years. Okay, you ready for some Taylor Swift?
Totally. Go.
Two truths and a lie.
Okay, go.
She was named after James Taylor. Okay. She's a former Victoria's Secret model. She grew up on a Christmas tree farm.
James Taylor's a lie.
Wrong.
Oh, serious?
Yeah.
I don't think she was a Victoria's Secret model, but I think she was in, like, one of their fashion shows.
Oh, well, maybe I told you a lie that actually is the truth.
Oh.
Because I just changed it to Victoria's Secret.
Uh-huh.
So on the list of Taylor Swift facts here that I have pulled up from E! Online, she was a Abercrombie model, which makes sense because she's tall
and thin
and white and basically a walking clothes hanger.
Uh-huh. Huh. Yeah, James Taylor, really. Huh, that's surprising. When you just gave your reference there, it reminded me I should do mine. So my sources are all this interesting Atlas Obscura, Abandoned Southeast, Wikipedia, of course, the Church of Satan, the person that I spoke with through Facebook, Shauna Farrell, and then I read an entire freaking book, like with pages and everything, called The Corpsewood Manor Murders in North Georgia by Amy Petula, which is a very interesting book.
Oh, you read a whole book?
Yeah, and then I spilled water all over it, and now uh-oh, it's ruined.
That's kind sad. Of bummed. Is it in the bathtub?
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens.
All right, I think we're done with episode 100.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I almost forgot. I almost forgot. I almost forgot.
What?
Oh, shoot.
What?
Don't be a fountain. Nope.
No. House think about it.
Okay, don't be a drain. Be a fountain.
Not a drain.
Bye.
Bye.